Hello and welcome to Three Bean Salad. This episode is dedicated to the utterly perfect Lola Cola.
Did everyone have a nice summer break?
Very nice, thanks.
Yeah, I had a very nice time.
Obviously, we're now kicking off a new series. I think this is series 10.
Is it?
Which feels big, doesn't it?
Crikey. That's huge.
Do either of you have any kind of new series resolutions?
I tell you what, I've got a thing I was thinking of sharing with the podcast, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is that a couple of days ago, I went to see a personal trainer.
Oh, that poor son. Who are they? What are you going for? Are you going?
Well, yeah, are you trying to get stacked?
Well, I don't know. So
are you going for beef?
Here's the thing. What I was thinking was I could maybe fill you in about it over the podcast a bit, and we could call it Henry's Beefcake Journey.
Oh yes, so, that's the first new jingle of the series, definitely.
Yeah. Oh yeah, come on, mate. Yes. Ah, I'm in agony and I absolutely love this. Ah, more pain.
Crunch it, push it, flex it.
More pain.
Smash it, sprain it.
Way.
The path to beauty is prolapsed hemorrhoids.
Ah.
Henry's Beefcake Journey.
Because I think, look, this podcast is about positivity, isn't it? It's about.
Is it?
I don't know. It's about being in the moment, living life, maximizing yourself, fulfilling your potential, isn't it? All of our listeners fulfill their potential every day, yeah, to the max. that sort of thing. No, I didn't really know why. That's the first question he asked me. Actually, he said, "Why are you doing this?" And then he sort of went, "Longevity." Right? Longevity.
When he said, "How do you do this?" Which words did he stress?
Not how do you do this. Why are you doing this?
Yeah, was it like, why are you doing this?
I think.
Or was it why are you doing this? As you attempted to show him a sort of butt crunch or something.
Why are you doing that?
Please, for the love of God, stop doing this. Why am I doing it? I just think it's just good for health. I heard a thing on the radio, I've never had any strength in me. I don't know. I'm not expecting to do it for more than about a month.
You just want to be a terrifying beast, right?
I want to be a terrifying beast. Anyway, but
you want to be the next Jason Statham.
Exactly. But he said to me, it's slightly pricked my bubble when he said longevity.
So he was saying, like, by the looks of you, you've probably got 2 or 3 weeks left. Let's try and...
We can try and boost this into my 2 months of life package. He basically looked at me and thought, so basically you want to look good, you want an open casket at your own funeral, and you want to... you want to go out looking good. Going into the gym environment was quite weird. I mean,
I've always hated gyms.
Yeah, I really don't have any hope that this is going to... I don't expect this to last even the whole series.
I think if he was a bit of an exercise man, though.
Yeah, no, that's
always
the thing.
Liked your football.
I am quite... I do exercise.
It's permitting.
I like my football running and cycling and stuff. But I think basically I've got no strength building.
Was there also like a sort of yoga phase you had?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I still do a bit of yoga. But basically there was a thing on the radio where it said it's good to have strength in life. For your health and stuff. And I've never really picked up anything.
But surely as, you know, as the future barrels on and we replace everything with robots and machines, we don't actually need to be strong ourselves, do we?
But Ben, I agree. I used to think that as well. But weirdly, that's not what's happening. If you look out of your window, certainly in London town, everyone's beefy as hell. It's just Beefcake Central for no reason.
There is a beef fashion, definitely.
Everyone is beefing up. And you've just got to stay beefy if you're going to stay up.
But isn't that fine? That's sort of men in their 20s, isn't it? That's the sort of, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just a number, right? Yeah.
Cholesterol's just a number, right?
Yeah. How many weeks I've got left to live is just a number, right? Of weeks. Basically, I think me going to this personal trainer is a very, very weird. It's a sign of some sort of crisis, and it's very, very strange. Nevertheless, strap in for Henry's beefcake journey.
So, Henry, if you are mooting that we make this a feature, do we not need to sort of every week find out how much you're benching?
Yeah.
We need some measurables, don't we?
We do need some measurables.
Yeah. According to my personal trainer, the kind of bench I'm interested in is the one that's going to have my name on it pretty soon.
He loved this spot. Just outside your local Pret a
Wilting, a single wilting daffodil.
Does your personal trainer know about your exclusively prep-based diet?
No, we haven't got onto the nutrition breakdown system yet.
Oh, he's going to protein shake you, isn't he?
He's given me an app. He's talked about nutrition. I haven't actually got in touch with him since our meeting, but I'm supposed to get in touch with him to set up our first proper sesh. I'll say a few things. One is, I made the Schwarzenegger joke.
Which is?
Which is...
I've put out my back.
Okay, so you asked him for his clothes, his boots and his motorcycle. Yes?
No, I because when we were talking about what I wanted out of it, I said, I'm not expecting to come out of this looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And he went, no, you're going to look better than Schwarzenegger.
Schwarzenegger's going to be your before picture. He showed me a before and after picture of himself, my personal trainer.
Why? Had he been through a bit of a journey himself? What was his before, though?
He'd been through a journey. Well, the weird thing about his before and after picture is that he doesn't currently look as good as his after picture anymore. So there's a before picture and after picture. there's him in real life.
Now picture.
He's not as good as his after.
They never go to now, do they? With these threads. Before, after, now. Oh, God.
Exactly. There's loads of things can happen after. After's not the end.
Well, that's it. Well, these beefcake guys, there's going to be a period of beef collapse, right? Once you've beefed up, it takes an awful lot of work to stay beefy.
To maintain the beef.
There's going
to
be a national beef collapse where people are just dragging along piles of soggy, saggy beef along the pavement.
Also, he didn't actually look as good as he did in his photo, which is a weird moment.
Were you catfished?
I think I might have been catfished.
IRL catfishing. It's the first time anyone's got away with it.
He looked basically, when I went onto this... So I checked out a few gyms in my area, right? One of them... was way too young skewing in its vibe.
Right.
And basically you get a little tour of the gym and the girl said, this is where this happens, this is where this happens, and that's where the DJ goes. and I was like, this isn't for me. It was really, really... So I found a gym that's maybe a bit better for me, but...
Is it one where people sort of rehabilitate after accidents? Is it high on a cliff in Eastbourne? After you do your workout, you sit on a wheelchair with a tartan blanket over your lap, just looking out to sea.
They spray warm, salty vapour into your face.
And give you a watercolour kit. Yeah, there's a lot of...
A lot of scones, yeah?
No, this is London. This is a hot basement. It's a hot basement full of 20-somethings. So there was three personal trainers... that you could choose from that were associated with this gym. So I had to choose them based on their photos and a little bit of information about them. One of them was a bloke who was actually like more of a sort of middle-aged bloke. And I thought that my instinct was he's the guy I should go for. He'll understand my body.
Okay.
But that person was basically, I suddenly decided... they might be a Chechen warlord in hiding in London. There's just something about his face.
You didn't want to be caught up in that drone strike.
I didn't want to be part of that. So I plumped for this guy,
the Beefmaster,
who was just a sort of vital, young, sort of beefy.
We probably shouldn't use his real name. I'm going to beep it out, and from now on, we'll just refer to him as the Beefmaster.
So I turned up. He wasn't quite as beefy as he looked in his thing, but that's okay. He's de-beefed a bit since that photo was taken. So he took me into a small basement. We chatted about goals. Then a thing happened, which was I felt like he was quite invested in my body future, my self confidence, my health goals, and that kind of thing. But then he said, So what I like to do is sign people up for 3 months.
Oh.
And then he put this piece of paper in front of me. You know, you go with the flow in these situations, but I started to realise I'm getting trapped into a subscription model here. Mm-hmm. It's happening again.
Yeah.
And I was looking through the paperwork that he had in front of me, and I was thinking, so 3 months. Initially, I thought, oh, that sounds reasonable, 3 months. But then I saw it was for once a week. I mean, that's a lot of money. He was going, you know, and you could just decide if you can just sign up now, and I've got the card machine here, and as I was looking at it, I started to notice. Because I was thinking about it, but I started to notice his body language out of the corner of my eye. And basically...
He was poised for attack.
He basically climbed up onto the ceiling and was staring straight down at me with a dagger in his teeth.
Had he put on a Chechen military uniform?
I chose the wrong one! The other guy was just an innocent but strongly built Chechen farmer. And he was doing that thing of... Cause I was basically about to sign this thing and go for it. But I noticed that across my eye, his body language, he was doing that twitchy... You see, that little twitchy kind of... He was kind of moving his pen around, and he was basically trying to not give away the fact that he's about to... This fucking...
I need this.
This fat tosser on Dennis's door is about to sign for 3 fucking... I need this. Yeah. I need this so that I can go and see my personal trainer so I can try and make myself look like my after again. I desperately...
It's a huge pyramid scheme going up all the way to Schwarzenegger at the top. Just beefier and beefier people going up.
But I could see he was trying to do was cover his excitement. If he'd just been beaming with a big smile on his face and a thumbs up, I'd have probably done it. But he was kind of trying to make light of it. He was just kind of oh, this is no big deal, just sign away 3 months. Once a week for 3 months. There's no way I'm still going to be seeing a personal trainer in 3 months. Both of us know that. Everyone knows that. So anyway, so I resisted that, but I have signed up for four meetings with
the Beefmaster.
When you said to him, "Sorry, I don't want to do the 3 months. I'm just going to sign up for 4," what was his reaction?
Was he sick on the floor?
You know what he did was, Ben. He basically garbled some completely incoherent stuff about goals and commitment, and it was just.
Oh,
it was
God. I mean, I'd have been out of the door at that point.
No, but he sort of said something like. Well, no, the fact is, what we do find is that, you know, if people commit to it, that's part of what it's about. But I'm sorry. I felt like saying this already to him.
The Beefmaster.
Look, I don't like you. Yeah. and this relationship is not going to work. That's basically, how's that for a goal?
Yeah. I'll see you next week. For £400.
He just said some stuff about, you know, commitment and goals and stuff. But I'm sorry, but that's not you don't just buy 12 of something before you've tried it, do you?
That's why you're often seen to be eating raw eggs in the aisle of a supermarket.
Exactly. You've got to try one. It could be a bad batch.
Well, best of luck, Henry. I mean, I'm looking forward to your transformation.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's going to be good.
Could it be, though, that you become too much of a jock?
Well, that's one of the risks, isn't it?
Sort of to be a podcaster?
Like, I could beef my way out of podcasting and into self-help.
This might get very fratty, mightn't it, this podcast?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see what it does to my personality and bod over the next couple of months. But my feeling is that I probably won't see him even for the full 4 that I paid for.
Okay, time to turn on the Bee Machine, but instead of playing the usual jingle, or rather... have you hear the sound of the Bee Machine warming up? Jez has sent in his own version.
Is that our first Bee Machine audience jingle?
I think we've had one before, maybe, but it's a rare it's a rare occurrence. Jez writes, "Dear Beans, I recently became aware of an AI tool that creates short songs given a simple set of lyrics. In the interest of science, I fed it in the lyrics to the Bee Machine jingle, and it produced the following song, which is uniquely horrible."
Can I say, I had about an AI tool the other day. It's called Mark Zuckerberg. Does that work? I thought, go for it early in the season, just go for it. Okay.
Right, I'm going to play you this new Bee Machine jingle. Here we go. Bee Machine.
Well, you know what? I am going to become a beefcake. I'm going to make things happen. If you watch this space, that's made me believe in myself, that music.
It was quite inspirational, wasn't it?
It was really inspirational.
But it was that weird mix of inspirational and the knowledge that nobody involved in that was alive.
Was all of that AI?
Yeah, that was all just a robot.
Oh my God, that's the strongest emotional connection I've had to a piece of music for a while.
Do you think the machines should take over now, Henry?
I think they should. They just get it. They get it.
He's actually sent us another one. Let's listen to the second one.
Not bad. Yeah, I like it. I'm going to say it. I like it. What genre was that?
Miscellaneous rock, I think.
Was it more
like the sort of tune I might have covered in my little teenage band back in the day? There's only one chord.
It was quite Teutonic in some way, I think.
It was quite Teutonic.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Mike had been in a band. This feels like quite a strong...
Like a rich scene.
A rich chat strip scene, but...
Maybe where we interview the other members of the band.
Yeah. Where are they now? Mick Hucknall.
Carlos Santana.
Phil Collins and Santana. The other members of Mike's teenage band.
There's those moments when you decide you're going to go solo and the other guys say, listen, really, actually, you're the weaker link here, Mike. So probably... No. Better on my own, Phil.
And Hucknall. I'm going to say it now because I'm leaving. You're a prick.
Yeah.
Okay, so this week's topic, as sent in by Sean from Exeter.
Ooh. Oh.
Is beer.
Beer.
Can I say, every day's beer day anyway for me. I mean,
what time is it? Beer o'clock? Come on.
what day is it? Beer day?
Bin day? Drinking beer out of the bottom of a bin.
What month
day?
Is it? Beer, Rory.
What's the Chinese year of the beer?
What's that on my face? Is it a beard? Yeah. As soon as we stop talking about the podcast, we turn off and we just start talking about beer, isn't it? That's what's normal for us. You know what I mean? I love going down the pub and having beer. Hey.
The Beefmaster. What are my goals? Getting a six-pack of beer.
Way! Well, it's massive, isn't it, at the moment, beer?
Well, in the medieval period, weren't like children drinking it.
I'm talking millennia, Ben. No, apparently, beer is on the up, which is why wine is on the down a bit. And
is
French,
this right?
French wine producers are having to discard wine and then
just rebrand it as lager
by rebranding it as craft beer.
Because I suppose you brand something as craft beer, you can serve anything, can't you? Really?
My partner signed up to a free trial of something called, I think it's called Beer 52, which is one of those things where you get a box that comes through every month. She signed up for the free trial. I think that was probably about 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And she just keeps meaning to cancel, but never quite does.
Yeah, classic subscription model.
It arrives every month. You open the box and you're like, ooh, lovely, a nice coriander and apricot porter. Oh, I'm not sure I want that right now.
A plum stout that's 67% ABV.
Exactly.
That's weird, because really, right now, I'm more in the mood of something like a Foster's or a Cronenberg or a Heineken, weirdly. But
my irritable bowel syndrome's settled down a bit over the last few weeks, but this is really going to kick me into a new era. Is it worth it?
And yet each one is like either completely gross... Just unthinkably gross, because they're always trying to come up with new flavours that involve weird fruit.
Yeah.
So it'll be like light cheese and
light cheese and lasagna lager.
And who are these people making them? Is it like lots of little small producers? Because there was a craft beer thing that happened.
Yeah, so what it is it's loads of businesses that are essentially two middle-aged men who were made redundant from their job in an insurance company, were given a payout, and then they, before the beer has hit the shelves, they've gone out of business. But in the meanwhile, they've created 200,000 cans of blackberry milkshake flavour beer. I mean, if they can't sell them to the beer box companies, I think they then repackage them as a kind of cleaning fluid and sell them to like primary schools to clean the hall.
In fact, that this thing about the French wine, I can't remember what the story was, but they were having to repackage it as something else. In fact, that was part of how they were having to get rid of all this spare wine.
Well, there's a new thing with wine, isn't there? Which is like trendy wine. Are you aware of this?
No.
So wine used to be the bottle of wine used to have a sort of your options are.
A picture of a chateau.
Picture of a chateau. Yeah.
That's the one I always go for. A nice black and white, grainy looking picture of a chateau.
Yeah.
I don't like a picture of like a crab playing a banjo.
So that's the classic wine bottle. And then some kind of old fashioned looking font that says something like...
Well, if you look closely, it actually says this was collected from bar floors in Derby.
Yeah.
If you actually... But you don't because you see the picture of the chateau and you just go for it.
And it's $4.99.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Lager wise, I like a lager, right?
Yeah.
Only flesh and blood, mate.
Is there a difference between any of the lagers?
Well, I've got no idea. Cause I've never known the difference between anything. I don't really have a drink. I'm just pretending in pubs.
If you serve it cold enough,
I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't matter. Yeah. Isn't that the key with lager? That it's just a glass of.
Of cold.
Of quite relaxing cold.
So my theory is that lager, right,
oh, yeah,
is all the same, but the difference is the branding, right? So they've decided, like, so Peroni, they're just trying to tap into...
Yeah, I like it when it sounds Italian or something. I'll go for a Peroni. Mm-hmm. Or I'll go for a Moretti because I like the picture of the guy with the hat.
Yeah, so for me, Moretti's more like rural Italy. Mm-hmm. It's you know, a dinner on the in a sort of village square.
Yeah.
Children running about.
Old man playing an accordion.
Bucolic family scene.
Cat with one eye.
A burgeoning fascist movement. the fascist band's playing in half an hour. That sort of thing. Perfect.
And a beautiful stream running through the valley that if you swim in, you'll be dead in minutes because of the toxic flow from that Nomangretta. Yes.
Large Nduja sausages.
Pouring out of everyone.
From the heads of uncles. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's Moretti. Mm-hmm. Peroni is more like your sort of metropolitan streets of Milan, Armani suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's that Italy.
Tight, squeaky leather shoes on sockless feet.
Sexy, youthful and sleek.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
If you just listen, just... everyone's trousers are ripping all the time because everyone's so tight. Every time everyone leans over or picks up a pot of Parmesan, just trousers are ripping because it's so tight.
Yeah, if you're not getting through six pairs of trousers in a day, then you're wasting your time.
And then obviously... Kronenbourg 1664, the French lager with 1664 is harking back to a kind of medieval past.
Also, what happened in 1664? That's a bit of that's some dad chat, isn't it, right there?
I'm looking it up. Oh, wow. Okay.
Go on.
So the Kronenbourg Brewery was founded in 1664 by Geronimus Hatt.
Wow. Okay. Keep bloody talking.
In the free imperial city of Strasbourg, which was part of the Holy Roman Empire.
Wow.
Geronimus Hatt.
Things like Kronenbourg, they have this little bit of heritage element to their branding, whatever. The thing is, all that branding, all those stories, those narratives, those histories, all then get flattened out to these are just cold, cheap things in an offie that people used to get pissed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's sort of, it's like there's two things going on at the same time there. There's Geronimus Hatt, there's medieval Europe, there's the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah. And then there's some lads on a train getting through a bag of carling.
Exactly. So there's kind of, yeah.
And then there's the American ones, there's like Coors Light, Bud Light.
Bud.
Those have got like a sort of, in my head anyway, it's like, I'm imagining a guy drinking it and driving at the same time and then shooting a sign as he drives past, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's got a cool box on the passenger seat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And a big dog next to it.
I think for me, beer is an area where it's like, I just think like growing up and sort of teenage years, it's a bit of a rites of passage of sort of becoming an adult. It was like knowing about beer. Suddenly beer was around.
Being able to talk a good game.
Yeah. And some people knew about it and knew about associations with it. Because I remember you'd go into an offie and they'd all these very similar cans lined up. and you'd reach for one, and somebody would go, "Oh, you're not a Foster's guy, are you? You idiot! Why are you Foster's?" Is, and there'd be loads of
Where's
associations.
The
Yeah. Exactly. And then, but then Stella had associations, but like I just didn't know what the hell anyone was talking about. But I remember one point I thought Grolsch was good, and no reason why.
I liked Grolsch purely because of the glass bottles with the flicky little top.
Yeah, flicky little top.
It was like a toy at the top, basically. Flicky little top.
I suppose maybe that was it. It was just a bit of fun.
Felt but nice in your hand.
But also, Henry, in the mid-90s, Grolsch did a bit of a push where... Yeah. If you ever watched the film Sliding Doors...
You know what? I've actually never seen that film, but I remember about 10 years ago, someone said to me, "Do you want to watch Sliding Doors tonight?" And there was this real moment where I was like, I could watch it, or maybe I won't. And I didn't. And that person who said, "Should we watch it?" was Andy McDowell. And that night, I met up with and started having an affair with John Hannah.
I mean, Andy McDowell's not in the film.
But she could have been.
Could have been. That's a Sliding Doors moment.
Well, she had the moment when she was asked, "Do you want to audition for the film Sliding Doors?" And that she always does still describes that as a Sliding Doors moment. Yeah.
And the next day it happened again, and then it happened again, and then it happened. That was her Groundhog Day.
It's good stuff, this, for the new series, then. It's quite good, yeah. we're setting out our stall, yeah.
If you watch Sliding Doors, every time they have a beer, it's a Grolsch.
Oh, really?
And the Grolsch label is very much turned towards the camera.
Is that? Okay.
And then I was watching it thinking, they must have some kind of deal here. This is uncanny. And then they must have done, because there's a bit where they go into a bar and the guy just goes, "Just a couple of Grolsches, please." that doesn't happen in films.
Yeah.
You don't give the brand in a film, you just say beer.
And also there's that bit where they make love, isn't it? Where John Hannah's climaxing and he goes, "Oh, Grolsch, oh!"
And in order to climax, he has to flick the little top off the end of his welly, doesn't he?
And then she goes, don't finish too quickly. And he goes, all right, hang on, give me a second. And then he starts looking at a pack of Skull. He's got a pack of Skull. Skull. He goes, "Just look at this. This means it lasts longer."
Oh, God.
Because it was that time it was Grolsch versus Skull, wasn't it, at the time?
Isn't Skull the company that makes those special plasters you put on your feet if you get a blister?
Yeah, and those are fermented over years in a Hamburg brewery.
Okay, let's read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, Postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Okay, thanks for everyone who sent us an email. Now, before the break, you might remember that something of a competition was brewing based on who had listened to the podcast at the highest altitude, not including plane travel.
Oh, yes. Because where was the last lot? Mount Fuji, was it?
Mount Fuji. So the top of Mount Fuji was our winner. But then, since then, we've had a couple of other contenders.
Oh.
Paul writes, Mount Fuji is so far the highest listened to Three Bean Salad in a non-aircraft environment. However, I'm afraid that it's too easily beaten, as I've listened to you in the car at the top of Mount Evans in Colorado, which is also the highest paved road in the USA.
Wow.
Where was that place?
Colorado.
Yeah, Mount Evans.
I've been to Colorado. Do you know that in Colorado, there's a free bus?
Go on.
End of anecdote.
Isn't that incredible?
Well, here, like in my local area, you can get a free bus from Asda into town.
Really?
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a free bus, though, is there?
Oh, apparently there's two. There's one in Cardiff and one in Colorado. Where does the free bus take you in Colorado? Denver Airport?
To the top of Mount Evans.
It's in Denver, and it takes you to up towards the Denver, I think it's called the Cherry Street Shopping Mall or something. Or
Denver Airport's the one that famously is the world headquarters of the Illuminati, isn't it?
Is it?
Is it?
Bloody hell.
Yeah, that's the one that's that there's loads of conspiracies attached to it.
Is it?
Denver Airport, there's all kinds of, if you have a Google, there's 1,001 conspiracies associated with Denver Airport because of its design and shape, and people, there's various people that believe that there's all sorts of, there's a whole kind of subterranean world beneath.
Really?
Which might be a sort of military bunker or an Illuminati base.
All linked by free transport links, free
exactly,
free monorails, free buses.
Precisely.
So Paul comes in with Mount Evans.
And Breezily as well. He's just driven up there, right? The other guy's there to actually hike their way up a mountain.
Yeah.
This guy, he's just got his cool box full of cores.
Just to be clear, we're measuring height from the centre of the Earth. Not, yeah, is that right? Not from ground level, because ground can be different heights.
Which is why historically people have used sea level as the that's the way of doing that.
But sea's not all at the same level, is it? Come on, is it?
Yeah. Or we could do it the other way. We could do it height down from orbit.
That's a good point.
We'll go for the shortest one. You prefer, Henry.
Or from the top of Henry Packer's head when standing.
No, I just think if you think about height relatively, who's to say that the top of Mount Fuji, and he's saying the top of this mountain in Colorado is higher.
Yeah.
Measured from sea level on each side, is it?
I don't know where the phrase on each side comes into it.
No, I think it checks out, to be honest. It does check out. Sorry, carry on.
Okay, then we've had an email from Joe.
Yeah.
And Joe shares an image with us, actually, which I will share with you.
Ooh, Joe. Wow, that's a good photo.
Yeah.
Joe really means business there.
Well, he doesn't look like he's enjoying the podcast very much, though, does he? From his facial expression. He's actually not smiling at all. He's got a look of absolute grim determination on his face.
But that might be quite normal. That might be how it's just generally received.
So do you think it's a kind of altitude training? If you can listen to our level of banter at high altitude...
Maybe people need that level of fury to get up, do you know what I mean, as a motivator.
Right, okay, yeah.
Either it irritates you to the degree you can march up a mountain, or it puts you to sleep.
But obviously, you know, we are purveyors of lukewarm banter. At altitude, I think the boiling point lowers, is that right?
Yes.
So actually, we're getting closer to hot banter.
Well, it's because the banter becomes less less dense because there's less air pressure.
So the banter can just evaporate, even though it's just lukewarm.
Yeah. But what will happen is if he then comes down the hill, the mountain,
he'll get a banter cloud forming over his head.
He'll get a banter cloud forming over his head. He'll find that he listens to the podcast much more easily. If you can listen to it at high altitude, you come down and he'll be listening to the podcast.
Because he'll just have sort of condensation anecdotes just dripping off him.
Would you like to know where he is listening to this? Hello, Beans. On holiday in Alpine Chamonix.
Chamonix.
I listened with interest to hear of Will and Erin's claim to the highest altitude at Mount Fuji, the height of which is 3,776 metres. The next day, I subsequently hopped in the world's steepest cable car.
Ooh la la.
To ascend to Aiguille de Midi. This did not involve any hiking, climbing, loss of feeling in my hands, or any form of brainal hypoxia. Practically no effort at all. At the mountain's upper station, I proceeded to whip out my earbuds and listen to the podcast at a height of 3,777 metres. Beating Will and Erin's record by a single metre.
Oh, cruelty of it.
That's cruel, but I like it.
That's a proper Benjamin move there, Joe.
That really is.
That is a Benjamin move.
Zero effort, 1 metre.
I apologise for this galling act of one-upmanship, but I now claim the record for the Three Bean Salad highest altitude listen, brackets non-aircraft category, so suck it.
Wow. Does that beat Paul? Hang on, does that beat Paul in Colorado?
Well, I don't think so, because we need to look up how tall Mount Evans is. It may be that I should have read out those emails in a different order.
Can I say, I feel a bit sorry for Mount Evans as a mount, because whenever you Google it, you put Mount Ev in first.
Yeah.
And let's put it this way. Mount Evans is not the first Mount Ev on the internet. Going to have to try hard.
What is?
Mount Everest.
Oh, I see, of course.
Yeah,
I was thinking Mount Evian.
And of course, Mount Evian, the famous mountain as depicted on the Evian bottles. The perfect alpine peak that people spend their whole lives looking for.
So Mount Evans, I believe, is actually quite a lot taller. It's if you went to the very top, I don't know where the paved road goes.
No.
But the top of the mountain is 4,348 metres.
Straight up. That's measured straight up, isn't it?
We really need to...
Straight up from the bottom, rather than from the sea, because the sea level isn't from the nearest sea. It's not a huge sort of stretched diagonal line from the Pacific.
What I'm saying is... as the crow walks, as the crow walks, you might be walking a lot further to go up a mountain that's less high if it's got a wider spiral profile.
Staircase.
If it's wider to, because obviously you walk round, it's like peeling an orange, isn't it? You walk round a mountain, you spiral up it, you round and round. I think it's straight up necessarily, depending on how steep it is.
So I'm going to say that Will and Erin, who went at Mount Fuji, still win in the category of altitude. Listen to the podcast at an altitude you have ambulated yourself to.
Are you changing the okay? Because I've just Googled that categories. Road, and I think that road does go higher.
Yeah. So I think
the Mount Evans Scenic Byway. It's called.
Yeah. Okay. So I think Will and Erin, because they peregrinated themselves to the top of Mount Fuji,
yeah,
they win so far in the category of highest altitude under self-peregrination of listening to the podcast. I think that Joe is no longer a winner in any category, sadly, and Paul is the winner of highest altitude using a vehicle or other...
Non-peregrinatory climbage.
Yeah. Can I say, strictly speaking, should we be allowing for at what level do they live their average day?
No, that's a good category. It's another good category. Yeah, I like that.
No, but in terms of the distance between that and the top of this mountain, because where are you travelling from? For example, if you live three or four floors below sea level,
yeah,
you can in theory floors? Add... Floor. Floors. You could add that in theory to your how far you've gone up that day to get to the top. I mean,
but what if someone lives very high above sea level?
Well, exactly. Then you've got a head start.
They've had to go all the way down again and then back up again. They might have had to have twice the route.
Well, but maybe they should go down half the distance. All I'm saying is, if you measure something from A to B, you know, in a race, everyone starts at the same point. But we haven't made that. We haven't allowed for that necessarily in our calculations. I mean, there's an argument that you should average out your height above sea level over the previous, say, month.
Okay.
And factor that in.
And is that a neap tide, Henry? When should that be in terms of the tidal mark?
But again, great question. I think, because obviously sea level changes, doesn't it? Well, good point, Mike.
Anyway, if you're listening and you think that you have beaten some sort of geographical record vis-a-vis listening to the podcast, do get in touch.
This might be a bit 70s as an idea, but how about...
We fund a Latin American right-wing militia.
We fund a... That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm thinking. Because it hasn't happened for a while. It's probably, maybe it's not a bad time to actually think about it. No, to people listening to the podcast in front of famous world monuments.
Okay. Why is that 70s?
I don't know. I'm thinking Taj Mahal. I'm thinking...
Taj Mahal.
Taj Mahal, the back of the Taj Mahal. On the side of the Taj Mahal, the service entrance of the Taj Mahal.
So this is essentially a new format point, which is, mm-hmm, have you listened to Three Bean Salad near the Taj Mahal?
Great.
Send us a photo.
Yeah.
This is from Alex. Dearest Beans, I got lost down a rabbit hole of Wikipedia pages of books that had been made into movies. And I stumbled across a Mr. Robert Ludlum.
Ah, yes.
Who rose to fame as the creator of a certain Mr. Jason Bourne. Mm. I was reading his biography and was reminded of a time in a recent episode where you all made up ridiculous names for thriller novels, such as The Octopus Dilemma. I remember that episode.
The Crimson Briefcase. It was things like that, wasn't it? Yeah, it was good.
Reading Mr. Ludlum's bibliography was arguably the highlight of my day, as the majority of his novels have wonderfully ridiculous titles. Please take the time to read through the select list.
Yeah, lovely.
Okay, so now time for a dramatic reading of the titles of novels by Robert Ludlum.
The Scarlatti Inheritance.
The Osterman. This just sounds like a bad holiday where we never should have gone to France with the Ostermans. It's the Osterman weekend. Honestly, we've only met the Ostermans twice before. It was an idiotic idea. But of course John Osterman, it just flashes that smile at you and you think, yes.
The Gemini Contenders.
The Rhineman Exchange.
The Holcroft Covenant.
The Aquitaine Progression.
The Scorpio Illusion.
The Paris Option. That feels like what they should have. We should have gone for the Paris. We shouldn't have gone for the Ottoman weekend. We had the Paris option right in front of us. Great little hotel. We know we like the bistro next door. We know we like it.
We could have used the train instead of flown. It would have been greener. Oh.
And finally, the Bancroft strategy.
I mean,
which sounds like the least successful business self-help book ever published, doesn't it?
Are you failing to reach your potential? Have you tried the Bancroft strategy?
That's right. We took the wisdom of banking and crofting and put them together into one lifestyle choice: Bancrofting.
You'll be lending people money from a tiny hut in the Highlands. So thanks, Alex. Those are phenomenal. And I think if I'm going to read one of them, I'm going to start off with...
Is one of them. That's my reading list. That's me for the year.
I mean, those are absolutely brilliant. What's he called again? Robert Ludlum?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think he knew what... I mean, do you think like he just... He would almost stick a finger in a dictionary kind of thing?
Yeah.
Because you've got... Essentially, the second half of it is always just any noun. Isn't it? So you've got the... Then you've got a name, and then you've got any noun. So I'm going to make a name right now for a Robert Ludlum book.
Yeah.
Exciting, isn't it? Yeah? This is happening. So first of all, I'm going to do random name generator.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to do random noun generator, assuming these things exist. Okay. I'm just going to... I need to choose where it's from. What country?
Let's go Southern European.
Portuguese, I'm going for.
Okay.
Okay, think about it. You're in Heathrow Terminal 3.
Yeah.
Got 40 minutes till check-in. You've got your pret-a-manger sandwich. You've forgotten to get a book. You're in WH Smith.
Yeah.
It jumps out of you from the shelf. Do you buy the Antonia basket?
It's between that or the Janine sneeze guard.
That's a plausible name.
What, the Antonia basket?
Yeah.
The Antonia basket.
That sounds like a very different type of novel to the Ludlums, though, doesn't it? So very, I mean, he's going to have to write under a different pen name for that, I think.
It's time for Listener Bollocking of the Week.
Accessing Listener Bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
This is from Chris, and he says this is a proxy bollocking. I write with you today with not a bollocking, but with news of a proxy bollocking.
Okay.
One morning meeting at work, I was ambushed with a request for a fun fact. I did not have any fun facts. I had been listening to your Loch Ness Monster episode on the way in, and so the facts I had to hand were the following. Lake Ohrid is not the deepest lake in Europe. Lake Ohrid does not contain Europe's oldest trout. And Loch Ness, despite being very deep, does in fact have a bottom. These were deemed unsatisfactory, and after being ridiculed and given a verbal warning for wasting company time, I went with ants don't sleep. Which I've since found out is also not true.
It's a good punt, though, isn't it?
It's a good punt.
It's a good punt.
Please consider this a bollocking by proxy. So I think the idea was that we have been bollocked for the meagre state of the facts that we were able to.
Okay.
Because we filled his head with crap.
Yeah.
I think communally, I think maybe we should just take that one. I mean, I certainly
feel. I think we certainly have a share of the blame there.
Yeah.
Bollocking accepted.
And finally, an email from Rowan.
Hello, Rowan.
Hi, dear Beans, it occurred to me while I was listening to the episode The Essence of Fear that there are no visualizations of what the bean machine might look like. I immediately got to work putting together a kind of police sketch of the machine, and I've already sent it to the UN Court of Human Rights, the WHO, and the WHO. Enjoy! So Rowan has sent us this image. This maybe doesn't make for great podcasting, but we will share these images.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant, the image he's done. It's very, very good.
Rowan's hit the nail on the head.
It's quite horrifying, isn't it? The way that he's bloodied my lower torso.
Yes. Yes, he hasn't held back on that.
Anyway, thanks for that, Rowan. We'll put that up on social media.
Superb.
Do check
work,
it out.
Rowan. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can get a monthly bonus episode on there. Also, recently, for Sean Bean tier members, we put up the audio of our live show at the Macanteth Comedy Festival, which you can now listen to, which involves, amongst other things, learning the horrifying truth about how it is that sheep are milked.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
A real revelation for everyone who was there.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
It was a jaw-drop moment.
And also it showed the what will... you know, one day be seen as a historic moment, which was the first ever edition of Ask That Crab. Was it?
Wasn't it called Crabatha Christie or something?
Basically, a really strong crab segment.
A very strong live feature.
A really strong live crab feature.
Will the live crab feature, which we should say doesn't involve a live crab.
No. We kill the crab just before coming on stage.
No crabs, live or dead.
No, there's no...
Will he be doing that same crab feature in our upcoming London Podcast Festival shows?
100%, yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be featuring heavily in all three of our shows.
Yeah, worth mentioning tickets for streaming that are still available. There's no more tickets for being in the room. Although I think some might be released maybe on the day or something, I don't know.
Yeah, I think there might be a few more released.
But basically, if you want to watch, grab a streaming ticket. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Or search King's Place on Bing. So do check out the Patreon. If you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, not only do you get access to our live show audio, you get a little shout out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge. You were there last night, weren't you, Mike?
Sure was, and you sure do. Because last night, well, it was a big one. There'd been a bit of a gap after the summer. So last night was the...
Was it the skulls with candles in their eyes jumble sale?
It was. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report.
It's September, the spring of autumn, and what better way to mark it than with a traditional Skulls with Candles in Their Eyes jumble sale? With all proceeds going to Sean Bean's fund for the construction of a Sean Bean-themed cruise ship that's too big to fit through the Strait of Gibraltar. Jack Offaler claimed to have installed beeswax candles in the skull eyes of Richard III, but DNA testing revealed the skull to in fact belong to a honey badger, and the candles to be eyes, and the honey badger to be in the prime of life. The humiliated honey badger took it out on the trestle tables of Stephen Daniels and Amy the Ant Queen Taylor, the trestle bench of Lizzie Martin, and the trestle shoes of Ben Mercer, leading to a mass spillage of hot soy wax, which engulfed and set around Jamie McBride and Andrew Vinson. Ever the opportunist, Darcy Snow 84 installed these bespoke man candles into an 18-foot-high Beast of Unknown Origin skull, which hitherto had been illegally lit by Panthea Bishop and Alex Walker with phone torches and was at risk of being ejected and destroyed. All now being well, the skull was purchased by Pippa Popolis Sidi Plok Ikmebum for a record £48,000 and is currently being used to light his priceless beanbag display chamber. Cy Jubb, the photographer, sold floating candles in the liquefied skull of a Larry Goose for £2 a pop. Stephanie Bond sold shares in the future use of the skull of Joseph Birtwistle, who sold unsculled votive candles at €8 a pair, including a voucher for Darren Foreman's candle skull insertion service, which is currently under investigation by Clementine Lloyd for breaching the Wax Bastards Accountability Act of 1862. Matthew Forbes's metal-wicked birthday candles in the eyes of the skull of an oryx was hotly anticipated, but wholly overshadowed by Susie's sparklers in babery wax crab skull inferno. Sarah Lewis was arrested en route for openly displaying a lit skeletal menagerie on a double-decker bus. The person who asked not to have their name read out did a thing we won't mention publicly. And Sander Epping's vol skulls with mini tea lights were a smash hit in the Impulse Jumble. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the podcast. We'll finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of the listeners. He's kind of the king of the theme tune, I would say. It's Connor.
Connor!
It's Connor again.
Connor's back.
Oh, great. What's Connor done now?
He says, it's my seventh submission now.
Wow.
Wow.
And for the previous six, I've designed it in such a way to spark guitar-related conversation. The kind that makes Henry want to turn into a slug and dive headlong into a salt cellar.
Very true.
Not this time.
Oh.
This theme has vocals.
Oh, I love vocals.
And baritone sax.
It's my favourite kind of sax.
So smooth, so mellifluous.
There is some guitar for melody and chords, but as an olive branch extension to Henry, I've excluded the usual dull bastard factor. Apologies to Mike and Ben. Beanest wishes, Connor.
Thank you, Connor.
Thank you very much, Connor.
I'm very excited about this.
Can't wait.
Wonderful. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
See you next time.
Cheerio.
Bye.
Oh, you bastard. Oh, no.
Ha 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 ha